Rose is your name, but when you poop, it sure don't smell like roses. Your number two burns the hair in my nose, but we fought hand in paw. Now your poop don't stink at all. Now that the air is clear, I'll treasure your front and rear, my sweet rose.
Instantly neutralize poop stink with Poop Fighter from World's Best Cat Litter for the world's best cat.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
So tell me your love for Franz Liszt and Scriabin.
Well, you know, Franz Liszt is really my favorite. Scriabin contributed a lot towards the development of harmony, and he really came on a really unique harmonic system. That being said, if I had to pick one, I would pick Franz Liszt. It really goes without saying, just the sheer amount of works that you can explore and the amount of different styles that all of those compositions encompass. You can also look at his transcriptions. I mean, Liszt transcribed stuff from Bach prelude and fugues for organ to completely free fantasies on Bach works, to things that are like multi-stylistic, like this Handel transcription, things based on popular tunes, like a ridiculous amount of variety, really experimental works. So with Franz Liszt, you're just never going to run out of repertoire ideas. I mean, Leslie Howard recorded the complete list, and that's what, 110, 115 CDs?
Right. Yeah.
You're not going to, it's safe to say you're never going to run out of material.
Absolutely.
Unless you're Superman.
Hello, piano enthusiasts. You're tuned into the Piano Pod. I'm your host, Yukimi Song. We're diving into part two of our season four opener featuring the incredibly talented Dr. Michael Kakoff. If you missed our intriguing chat in part one, where we delved into the mysteries of Scriabin's synesthesia and the life of an independent artist post-prestigious training, make sure to catch up on your go-to podcast platform. A warm welcome to all our new listeners. This podcast is your all-access pass to the captivating world of piano. In each episode of the Piano Pod, I interview a guest speaker who has been breaking exciting new ground in the industry. Please rate the show and review it on your favorite podcasting platform, because every rating review will help people find my show. So, my friends, here is part two of the Piano Pod's season four, episode one with Dr. Michael Kakoff. Please enjoy the show. You are listening to the Piano Pod, where we talk to the brightest minds in the industry about how they are bringing the piano into the 21st century. So how about Scriabin? I know you recorded Etudes before, Opus.
Yes, I've done the 65, the 65. Number three. I did the sixth sonata. I worked on the complete Opus 8. Scriabin is on my radar. I will definitely release a Scriabin album at some point. What grabs me the most in Scriabin's output is the late period compositions, the late period stuff after Opus 61. Absolutely, there's no question about it. I would it would be enough to say that all of them are worth learning. Every single opus from 61 up until 74. His last composition for piano, worth learning.
In your opinion, what makes them special and worth learning?
They're special because he came up on a harmonic system which is still based on acoustic principles. And if you look at the development, he actually didn't throw away the previous relationship, like the acoustic relationships. He's very aware of how the overtone series works, which how the sounds are actually formed based on the overtone series. It doesn't go against that. And even though you have things like the Sixth Sonata, which I recorded, probably his most dissonant composition, it's still, every single chord can be explained, and just the meticulousness of the writing and the way the material develops is extremely traditional. Very true. My teacher, Jerome Lowenthal, said that the Scriabin's late music is as clear as a Mozart sonata. It's like even more clear in terms of composition than Mozart. And he's right. There's like nothing in there that's out of place. The level of craftsmanship. Yes. Of course, when you hear it, it sounds chaotic, but yeah.
Yeah, it's true. Yes. You are a dedicated music educator, piano teacher, and you teach online mainly, and we can talk about the convenience of it and everything.
Yes.
But tell me what's like to teach at the Harlem School of the Arts.
Well, at the Harlem School of the Arts, I currently have one student who has been with me for many, many years. She started with me when she was 3 years old.
Oh, my goodness.
It was really kind of probably for a lot of people, they would say it's too early, but we kind of stuck with it. And we really worked hard with her. And my sort of end goal would be to have her audition for a couple of maybe college prep programs and things like that. I have a couple of private students that auditioned for different kind of pre-college programs. And I have one person that's currently who got into the Manhattan School of Music pre-college. It's very nice to also prepare for like really high stakes sort of professional goals. But a lot of people also want to take this as like a sort of like a fun class, or not necessarily to have like some kind of end result, like an exam in mind. So it's a spectrum. I have some people online that are preparing for the RCM or the ABRSM, also, you know, very valuable. I like that there's a standardized repertoire list, and it kind of makes my life a little bit easier because, as you know, selecting repertoire is actually like really, really important.
Of course. Yes.
How to pick pieces that showcase what you can already do and how you can grow. So that's that. Everyone sort of comes to me with a different goal in mind. I also teach a lot of like adult beginners, people that used to play piano as a kid and are coming back to it again. So it's like it's a whole spectrum. I've seen everything.
Great. And then so you only have one student at, you know, Harlem School.
Currently, yes.
Right. Then most of the students are through online.
Yes.
Wonderful. Yes. Now, let's talk about online learning. So e-learning has become such a big thing, obviously, after 2020, because that was the only way for many of us to be connected with each other, but also only way of learning as well. So tell me your thoughts on that. Pre-COVID, it was a huge resistance that I felt from among fellow educators and among students as well. But I was actually giving an online lesson even before COVID. I had one or two students who lived in Upper West Side and I couldn't go to their home. So the only way was through FaceTime before Zoom, because I did not know the existence of Zoom before COVID, honestly. Yes. So tell me your thoughts on online lessons, e-learning.
Online lessons and their success, a lot of the time, is dependent on the weakest link, the internet connection on both sides, and the kind of basic equipment people are willing to kind of invest in, either some kind of keyboard with preferably 88 keys or an acoustic instrument. So occasionally I make people go and purchase a microphone, like a standalone thing that's going to kind of circumvent the Zoom compression, something like this.
Yes.
If people can't afford it, I can take a financial hit on the first lesson and just buy this thing for them, just to ensure that the lessons aren't a waste of money and I can hear them and they can hear me. Seems like a really basic thing, but it really isn't, because it does take a little bit of special equipment to make it feasible. Otherwise, they cannot really, if there's too much of a lag, in the internet connection, it's right. also not a good value. You can't really teach.
Absolutely.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Now, it's online isn't ideal for complete beginners as well. I have those, but it's mm-hmm. less than ideal. And I think people that go into it, they know it might not be the best thing, but it can work with enough dedication. It can work. Mm-hmm. But the best results online that I found were people that already had some lessons prior, and they already have like very clear goals.
Yeah. Yeah. And then how do you like teaching online?
I love the convenience of it. Mm-hmm. I love working with people who are already come to me with a kind of a motivation, because mm-hmm. if you're seeking these lessons out online, it's pretty clear that you're kind of interested. You're not passively signed up for some kind of program. You're just going through the motions. So it's very, very, very nice. I've had people reach out because they do have an in-person teacher, but they want a second opinion as they mm-hmm. prepare for an exam. I've had mm-hmm. college students reach out to me also that are enrolled in some program, but they want like an extra lesson or also like a second opinion, or just mm-hmm. even to play through some pieces and see what I say about it. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's a great way to do that using online. Makes sense. Yes, definitely.
Yeah.
So as an educator, what do you see in these students, especially the students of Gen Z? I wouldn't say Gen Alpha, because I don't think you're teaching really young students, but
no.
Gen Z, I'm sure you have students in that, or maybe you are too. You are Gen Z. Maybe, I don't know.
Well, born 1990, what does that make me?
The millennial. Yes, you're still.
Still, mm-hmm. well, pre-millennial.
But the era is called millennial generation.
That sucks. Okay, yes. I'm millennial. Oh my god.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I'm having an existential crisis right now.
No. It's called Gen Y. You're in Gen Y. So Gen Z is like,
okay.
Yeah, Gen Z is the, I think the age under 23 or something.
Okay.
Yeah. So anyway, what do you see in students of that generation?
It varies. Well, people are much better suited to using technology. They're quite mm-hmm. fast with it. A lot of people already had to go through a lot of the schooling online just because of the COVID thing. I mean, they had to attend regular school mm-hmm. online. A lot of university students had to have online college lessons, even for their major. We're mm-hmm. talking about like all the big schools, even Juilliard, even people like in the dance program there, they had like online dance classes just through Zoom. So I feel like those students are already kind of well adapted to this. It's definitely, it needs like you need a certain level of tech savviness, and working online requires greater concentration on the part of a student, because you can only communicate these ideas. You can't like directly show it at the keyboard. Mm-hmm. It's more advanced. It's difficult. It's more mm-hmm. difficult, of course. You're not going to argue otherwise, but it allows for consistency of lessons. Mm-hmm. It allows for flexibility in scheduling, mm-hmm. and it can give you a decent result.
What kind of skills are required or demanded as musicians of young generation? You're young as well. So, that skills that you didn't necessarily learn from all the schooling you went through, you know what I mean?
Yes, I wouldn't say it's a skill. I think it's a mindset. Mm. I think it's a mindset. At some point, you have to really think, how do I want to play this composition? Or, what do I want to play? And why am I picking it? And, something, even as I am playing this repertoire, there's spots in the 19th Hungarian Rhapsody where I've always felt strongly when I listen to recordings of it, that it might need like a cadenza, or it might need like an embellishment on the repeat. And I went ahead and I composed a couple of inserts very carefully, so they don't sound intrusive, but I make tiny changes in the score. These are things that are really not encouraged in school. Mm. We're so glued to the score. I mean, I know some people would be horrified listening to a Liszt Rhapsody and then looking at the repeat passage and seeing that I added some things in there. Mm. But ideally, it has to be done very sparingly, very sparingly. It has to sound organic. Mm. It's a matter of taste. But at least I think when you get to the point where you can play what you want and how you want, I think that's already a win. That's a win. Think about it for a minute. Early training is based on restriction, what not to do. And you also learn by imitation. And that's a very good thing up to a certain point. When you're finally given a completely free pass to do whatever you want, what are you going to do? You know?
That's
an interesting, when you get to that point, that's pretty interesting. What are you going to pick? How are you going to play it? And why? Mm.
That's a very different perspective, right?
Yes. And I've only been thinking about it recently. Yeah.
That's a very important question to ask.
It is. And you have to come to this. I, for a certain period of time, I was collecting old recordings and listening to all the recorded output of like Rachmaninoff, Friedman, Gadovsky, Horowitz, like everybody. I have all the collections on my hard drive. I hardly listen to the stuff anymore, but I'm kind of aware of what the pianists of the past sounded like. And it was just an era of extreme freedom, really strong individuality. I mean, look at Alfred Cortot. Yeah. Everyone, all different, all so different.
And yeah. is that something that you should?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You should cultivate. Yeah? Okay. You should cultivate. Okay. It goes without saying. Otherwise, yeah. Why are you recording it if you can't bring something new to it? And I don't mean something new in a completely tacky, contrived way.
But
if you're not going to present something new or have your own ideas about it, why not just put a recording of Rachmaninoff on? Even something like the Rachmaninoff Third Concerto, which I haven't done. I have a wonderful recording of Rachmaninoff himself playing it in 1939. Give me a good reason to play that concerto again. You know, that's what you have to think about when you learn a composition. It may sound arrogant, but I'm not saying it's a competition between you and Rachmaninoff. No, it's like what's there? What do you have extra to say? And why are you picking it? And do you think that you can present something that's like unique enough when you select something?
Hey there, TPP family. The Piano Pod is now into our fourth season, and it's all thanks to you. Since 2020, you've been with my journey with the TPP, exploring this burning question. How do we make classical music resonate with today's audience in fresh and captivating ways? 4 years in, and the journey has been nothing short of magical. The Piano Pod isn't just a podcast, it's a movement, a space where pianists, composers, and educators brainstorm, debate, and reimagine classical music's place in our fast-paced world. We're together on a mission to ensure classical music doesn't just survive, but thrives in our modern age. But here's the thing. To keep bringing you these insightful bi-weekly episodes, I need your help. Every bit of support goes into the podcast essentials, from hosting to high-quality recording tech and the countless hours behind the scenes. So do you want to be part of this journey? Click the PayPal link in the show notes or head to thepianopod.com to donate. And as a token of appreciation, I will personally mail you the Piano Pod's snazzy logo sticker. So hit the subscribe button, spread the word, and let's continue our mission and journey as classical musicians. Now let's continue with the show. Because you are not only a concert pianist and recording artist, but also you're an educator. So let's talk about the vision of the classical music industry. So I'm curious to know your thought on how we can keep this classical music tradition, or even like classical music itself, relevant and then thriving in this fast-paced society.
It's still relevant. The markets of it have changed, but it's as relevant as it always has been. There's massive audiences online. Mm-hmm. You have to just find a niche. You have to find something that's like unique to you. Mm-hmm. And I think there will be an audience for that. You know, I saw a posting recently, and it was an artist, and he said that he basically doesn't want to continue posting his stuff on YouTube because he feels it's unappreciated, and he just wants to take down the whole channel. Mm-hmm. And I feel, what are you doing this for? Are you setting out to build up, you know, 400,000 subscribers, or are you getting your work out there? Because it's two very different goals. Right. So I would say you have to be patient. You have to find the audience that's right for you, that loves specifically what what you do and what you select. And it's a matter of just staying patient and creating more so-called content, but like on your own terms. If you go into this with the specific mindset of growth, you might have to go and study marketing first or look at something else, because it may not be immediately sort of comparable. Also, one pretty interesting thing, all the major streaming platforms, they've peaked, haven't they?
Mm-hmm.
They've peaked. The time to be on YouTube was right before YouTube was purchased by Google.
Right.
The time for that was like 15, 20 years ago, or mm-hmm. however long ago that was. You know, right now the market is so oversaturated that mm-hmm. you really have to be on the lookout for the next kind of big platform. I know, for example, when you post an Instagram reel, it gets more organic views than stuff on YouTube or Facebook, because Instagram is actively interested in promoting their kind of newer mm. platform with like more, like, you know, longer video. So mm-hmm. when the next sort of big thing comes out, you have to be ready for that. For example, mm-hmm. I worked a little bit with this company Muse Live, which I think they're gonna go. Dr. Lisa Yui, by the way, also played a couple of recitals for them. Okay. From Muse Live.
Yes,
I think they have an app, and it's gonna go live somewhere around this year or maybe next year. We'll see. It's a slight delay to it, but that's just a streaming platform where it's audio only, but it's uncompressed audio, so you can stream potentially like in high quality.
Oh, wonderful! Then, what is your thought on our responsibility or duty? Or you may say a gift as classical musicians to society at large.
That's a very good question. You know, I would say our duty in classical music isn't to cheapen the content so mm-hmm. that it's readily available for mass consumption. I think that's an error. If you think that you can get more views by doing a certain thing that your heart isn't really in it, and it's all just like marketing, and I think you know what I mean, when you kind of posting certain things that are there just for the views, I think people have to sort of reconsider really what is classical music. It's really come to the point where you might not want progress. You just want to do it. Let's do it well again. I mean, if you look at the past. Look at the past 100 years. Look at the past 100 years of the recording industry and of, you know, all the great artists of the past. I don't mean that to discourage people, just on the contrary, but a lot of this has already been done. Let's keep the level where it is. Let's kind of match the level. Let's not degrade it. Let's not cheapen the art for mass consumption. What I mean by that, even like platform limits. I know for certain Instagram clips, and I've been guilty of that myself, but you can only post a tiny soundbite that is 30 seconds long. I don't know if that's the best sort of, I don't know if that's the same, but the best medium for the art. Is a Chopin scherzo all about the coda, the last 30 seconds? I don't know.
No.
Mm-hmm. Is the Liszt sonata, you're just going to post the octaves, just the octaves, all the climax section, that's all the people are going to hear? I'm not so sure. So, it's a question of media. Mm-hmm. Also, what mindset are you when you're on social media and looking for so-called content to watch, kind of scrolling by? Are you going to listen to a late list masterwork when you can't completely focus on it, or it's like a background music? I don't think so. Mm-hmm. So it's a question of kind of redefining what these platforms are for. I don't mean that in a pessimistic way.
Right.
Yeah.
Totally. I understand that. Why do you think it matters to each one of us at one point to explore and examine our sense of purpose or mission as performing artists and music educators?
Well, I think we have to think about that anytime. I think just with rigorous schooling, with staying in a more kind of confined thing where you have a thousand things going on, your number one concern is, when I graduate, am I going to find a job? Am I wrong? Mm-hmm. That's really, that kind of weighs you down, and it completely it may crush some of your creative instincts, right? Let's say your main goal from recording is to make a profit. It's not going to happen. If you look at streaming, what streaming pays, and if you look at like the various platforms, I mean, it's not even close to minimum wage. Of course, there's things like Bandcamp where you can sell like a physical product, or people can donate, and these things are actually changing already. But in the case of the most popular one, like Apple Music and Spotify, right, it's safe to say that the streaming income that you make from that will not cover your production costs. Mm-hmm. These things have changed. Mm-hmm. They've changed very rapidly. You went from CDs, physical CDs, being relatively profitable in the 90s, when record labels were actively looking to duplicate the catalogs previously available in LP. There was a mad rush to get the stuff documented. That's when companies like Philips, Sony, and others would actually pay a very decent amount of money and royalties for that. Right now, I don't know. Right now, I think for the recording, it's going to go in a library somewhere. Mm-hmm. It's going to go in one of those, students I'm sure know this, with like the Naxos Sound Library, where you can access pretty much anything on demand for streaming. So the purpose kind of changed, but I think it's still worthwhile.
Life is hard.
Look, if you're number one, because I'm only saying this because people have asked me this. They're saying, well, there's what you're telling me, there's never going to be any profits in this, or absolutely there may never be any profit. And the best that you can hope for some of this is if you're a freelancer and you produce a project like that, is a nice tax write-off. Get a good accountant. Get a good accountant, write off those thousands that you invest in your career. It might be worth it. And then something eventually will click in place, because you're spending basically on, it's an advertisement, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
You're also taking a so-called loss artistry can't exist in a vacuum. You need an audience. You need a specific goal. Mm-hmm. It's not like a treadmill where, I'm just going to do this to get better. Just for self-betterment. That's not it entirely. You need an audience. You need at least one person out there that you're going to communicate with as you play. And it may reach somebody. Just one. It takes one person.
Yes.
Right?
So, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, when you make a recording, you're playing for the sound engineer in the booth.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, thank you, Michael. It's been a really great conversation. I am really enjoying this now. Timing's running up and we're toward the end of our wonderful conversation here, but I just want to know a few more things. So one is, what is your next step or next phase in your career? What's your next goal? Not that it doesn't have to be the specific, we know the specifics, like that your recording is coming up, your concert is coming up in September,
you asked a very good question. Mm-hmm. I want to play more live, and I want to start booking more venues and playing. Because recording can only take you so far. I want to just go live. I want to do more streaming, more live.
Okay.
and more live concerts. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And it will happen. And I can't wait for really the concert, you know, to attend in September and more, you know? So yeah, that would be great. Wonderful.
Yeah, it's enjoyable. Yeah. You know, look, you cannot set concrete career goals, because you never know how the industry is going to change and what's going to click into place. All you can do is be very alert and look at a variety of like different options and see what clicks into place. Otherwise, you're going to be deeply unhappy. Deeply unhappy. If your number one goal here is to secure a traditional management by a certain number of years, I don't know if that may ever happen. I'm fine with that never happening for me. I came to terms with that. But in music school, everybody's sort of grinding the same thing. They're either doing, you know, competition after competition, hoping to secure a traditional management, which is going to last only a couple of years anyway, in most cases, 3 or 4 years if you win something. And then they kind of grind these degrees. And then you hope to secure like a college position by a certain amount of time, after which people have told me, you know, if you don't secure a college professorship, like an X number of years after graduation, you may not be hireable. I'm fine with that.
Yeah, but
I'm completely
fine with that. It's not true though.
Yeah. And it's not entirely true. But you can't set like artificial deadlines for yourself like that, and you can't just start doing the same thing, you know, getting into a mode where you're doing the same thing over and over and hoping something's going to finally click into place. That's a definition of insanity. Yeah.
But you know what? Unknown makes us thrive.
Yeah.
It's hard, but the unknown makes us who we are as artists. That's why our industry, this performing arts industry, is so interesting. And you can really push so hard, so far, right? Because of the unknown that you're presuming, right?
Your only enemy is what's like inside your mind, like the limitations that you create for yourself. You think it can be done. Actually, it probably can. Just do it. Yeah. Just do it. Yeah. Just go for it right now. Yeah.
Before we go, I want to promote. So I know the concert is coming up on September 2nd, but this show comes up on the 5th. So unfortunately, it won't be much of a promotion. But for listeners, if you're listening and who are interested in learning more about Michael, please go to michaelkkoffpiano.com. And also, he will have the next All List album coming out in sometime next year, early next year, 2024. So please on the lookout for his recording on any music streaming services, I guess. Right?
And Bandcamp and others. Yes.
Okay. Great. Fantastic. So, Michael, again, this has been a great, fun, inspirational conversation. But before I let you go, we have one more thing to do. It's called the Piano Pod Rapid Fire Questions. And this is the part of the show where I get to ask fun questions to each guest. Now, here's a little twist. As silly as these questions may sound, your answers may reveal who you truly are. Oh, and then, I want you to answer each question with the shortest responses as possible. So, and then you don't have to explain anything. Just do it. All right. Are you ready?
Yes.
All righty. Number one, what is your comfort food?
Pasta.
Yay. How do you like your coffee?
Espresso, double shot with a little bit of steamed milk.
Ooh. Cats or dogs?
Dogs, preferably basset hounds.
Sunrise or sunset?
Sunset.
Summer or winter?
Winter.
Good old paper book or ebook?
Ebook.
Okay. What is your word or words to live by?
I don't think I have any. I don't think I have any. It might be an obscene word. It might be something obscene when you, in a frustration, you say something like that. But I'm a product of the 21st century, unfortunately.
It's okay. So what is the most quality you look for in other people?
An openness and good intentions. Just open to new things and not looking to beat anybody down, because there's really kind of two types of people.
I want you to name three people who inspire you, living or dead.
My mother. I would say also Franz Liszt. And maybe for pianists of the past, it's really, really hard to say. Really hard to say. Maybe somebody like Ignaz Friedman.
Oh, yes. I love his interpretation of Chopin Nocturne.
Oh, that's a great one. That's a great
B
one.
B major, especially. Oh,
the E flat major. There's a B major piano roll that you're referring to, but there's also the acoustic recording of the E flat, the late one. Yes. Yes.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Yes.
Yeah. Great. Now, name one piece in your current playlist.
Probably a bunch of Art Tatum stuff, something like Art Tatum, Night and Day.
Oh,
1946.
Yes. I love that pianist, jazz pianist, so much.
Oh, yeah.
He's incredible. All right, so last but least, fill in the blank. Music is blank.
Life. Music is life.
Wonderful. Yay, ding, ding, you won. So this concludes this episode of the Piano Pod. Thank you, Michael, for joining
show
today. No, thank you. It was great
to be here.
Oh, so wonderful. Much. And then thank you for sharing your stories and insights and expertise. You can learn more about Dr. Michael Kakoff and his amazing work through his website at michaelkakoffpiano.com. And you can listen to his recordings on all major music streaming services. All the links are listed in the show notes. Thank you to my wonderful audience and fans for tuning in. If you enjoyed today's episode, please rate and review it on wherever you get your podcast. Remember to hit the thumbs up button and subscribe to my YouTube channel if you are watching this this episode on YouTube. Follow the Piano Pod on social media to get the latest piano news via Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn. I will see you for the next episode of the Piano Pod. Bye, everyone, and bye, Michael. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you.